we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the BBC News website read by Rory Morrison.
Gordon Brown, David Cameron and Nick Clegg are once again set to go head-to-head. Drawing a larger audience than expected, the historic debate was watched by an impressive 9.9 people.
And our thanks to Edward Noon for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams, will you? Welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Sue Perkins. And opposite them on my left, Phil Jupitus and Fred McCauley. Jeremy, which 90-minute match was a three-horse race?
Well, you know, all eyes were on Clegg to see if he could repeat his triumph from last week. Cameron was said to have won, even though I thought he just looked like a puppy startled by its own flatulence. Brown just kept trying to persuade us how difficult it is to be Prime Minister. I thought, yeah, you've kind of shown by doing, Gordon. You don't have to tell. But Clegg, he's still going on about the old parties, because he speaks for the Whigs himself, obviously. But he made the mistake of trying to incorporate personal stuff, because he noticed that the others had incorporated personal stuff. And he started by saying how his mum had been liberated from a Japanese prisoner of war camp. I thought, don't start competing with people's travel chaos stories. People hold those things very dearly to their hearts. Don't try and get in on that one. The best question was actually the Pope question, where they all risked offending a religious community. Cameron's take on it was that he said that Catholics share the Pope's Catholic faith. I thought, I'd never thought of it like that, but I suppose you could argue that. And he didn't go on to say what bears do in the woods, but, you know. But Clegg, he started off, he said, well, I'm not a believer myself, and then said, but my wife's a Catholic, so the kids go to Catholic schools. I thought, that sounds really bad when you're hoping to be Prime Minister. Well, I have got ideas of my own, but, you know, I'm kind of married, so...
She's got a temper.
Yeah, you know, I know it's an EU summit this weekend, but I've got to go to IKEA. Not really into the Afghan war, but my wife really likes those dogs. And she thought maybe, you know, the army could pick one up for us, you know.
Before the debate started, Kay Burley was outside talking to these three gimps. I don't know who they were. She goes, well, we're here. We're all very excited. We're here in Bristol. What is the name of the river in Bristol? And, I can't remember. What is it? And the four of them, oh, I don't know. What's the river called in Bristol? And then Kay Burley goes, you know, it's a good job we're not having a quiz tonight. Or, indeed, a good job you're not running a national news network.
Bolton was very odd.
Adam Bolton's got no neck. He looks like a collapsed Davros.
A transsexual Martian in a frog costume. He's got eyebrows, hasn't he?
Yes, he's got them as well.
I kept expecting Bolton's head to start sort of bobbing around and him to go halfway through the debate to go, oh, yes.
But where was Rupert Murdoch in all this? Did you not expect him to substitute for David Cameron in the last dying minutes of the debate?
He was behind the curtain operating the machinery.
He was responsible for Cameron's arms move. He was responsible for the scrolling news along the bottom. He's at the side winding up. I missed the whole debate, but I can tell you retail sales went up 0.9% last month.
Well, I like Brown's joke that he made.
Yeah.
He'd got it written down and he was thinking, I'm going to try and get this out as soon as I can. And it was like a toddler with constipation, straining, and then delighted at the small, infinitely dense stool he'd produced. I've done it, there it is. I've got the joke out.
I think when he was doing that, I'm sure I heard one of them saying, that worked better in rehearsal.
Yeah.
The bit where I actually thought at one point Brown had broken with the strain. That moment where the other two were bickering and there was a moment where Brown was stood there and he was going, David, 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 David. I thought his brain had just locked. I thought it was like a stuck CD. I expected any moment now Ed Balls to come on and just poke his head. Just go...
As a astonished. Anybody else astonished by the press smearing of Nick Clegg? It was Daily Mail essentially claimed he was a Nazi.
Yeah, I mean, I was more astonished by the fact that on the debate yesterday that Adam weighed in asking a question. I mean, he's an arbiter. He's there as a sort of, you know, somebody who's supposed to be sort of neutral and merely facilitating the debate.
Yes, and he said, and you've been on the front page of the Daily Telegraph.
Yes, and you've got no neck. We can all start mudslinging, pal.
I think the country is now almost equally divided between people who think, well, I've never voted Liberal Democrat, but I rather like that Nick Clegg, and the rest of us who think, I could just about vote for Liberal Democrat if it weren't for bloody Nick Clegg.
It does strike me that this could be one of those elections. It's going to be like the way that the Lib Dems should tilt the campaign for the remaining 2 weeks. Vote for us, it could be a bit of a laugh. They've set up a Facebook group. Come on, Nick Clegg.
Even though they're becoming more studio savvy, you know, and looking down the camera, they still did kind of trip up now and again. Nick Clegg said we have to look at the big issues, some of which are huge. They'll be what we call huge issues. And Cameron said at one point we have to secure our future for the future.
He also told an 84-year-old woman he was going to do something about pensions in 2016. Now...
Did I imagine this, or did Cameron say, I'd been to Afghanistan and I was blown away?
Yeah. Yes. Well, I'm looking forward to next week's dance-off. In the leaders' debate, Cameron and Brown both raised their game, but so too did Nick Clegg, so it's still a three-party race. Sky Television hosted the second debate in Bristol and decked out an arts centre with giant pictures of the country's three leaders, Rupert Murdoch, Max Clifford and Jordan. In their summing up, Brown attacked Cameron and Clegg, Cameron attacked Clegg and Brown, and Clegg delivered a spine-tingling rendition of The Wind Beneath My Wings. 2 points to Jeremy. Sue, whose electoral credentials are whiter than white?
This is Martin Bell, the man in the white suit, erstwhile MP for Tatton, who announced that he has got this sort of independent network with sort of 40 or so independent candidates who he's endorsing. He's sort of put a seal of approval, like a sort of Martin Bell kite mark. So they subscribe to various principles like no flipping, no petting, no bombing, no diving, no letting your husband watch porn and then trying to claim it back off the taxpayer.
Isn't a group of independents an oxymoron?
Yes, absolutely. Well,
it's a bit like government efficiency or Sky News. It sort of doesn't... Well, I had a look in all your local constituency. Phil, are you aware that Terry Phillips is standing in your constituency for the English Democrats? Actually, you've got all of the crazies standing in your constituency. You've got UKIP, yeah. BNP, Labour, all of the... Anyway, do you know anything about the English Democrats? Because I'd check them out for you. Their website is terribly organised, very smart. It's got lots of drop-down menus. But when you hover over Contact Us, the only option you get is complaints, which is... Sue, your leading independent candidate in your area is standing for Mibion Kerno, the Cornish Party.
Is their platform? One pasty, one vote?
Yeah.
The Cornish Party want more funding for Cornwall, a proper debate about Cornish independence, and for Norfolk to return its accent. Jeremy, you've got the Christian Party. Geoffrey Macaria could get your vote, although I have to tell you their key policy pledge is to have you exorcised. So,
The group of independents has caused a little bit of a fuss up north of the border because the sole Scottish Tory MP doesn't know whether to join them or not.
This is my favourite. The cities of London and Westminster seat is being contested by Mad Cap'n Tom, a champion of pirate vernacular who wants all children to be trained in swordsmanship and gunnery because, and I quote, half of them be knowing how to use a knife already. I haven't got a punchline, I just wanted to talk pirate for a little bit. And confusingly, Jack Nunn is also standing in the same constituency on behalf of the Pirate Party UK, but that's got to do with music copyright and not speaking like... I just want to be clear, I don't want any pirates wasting their votes.
That's the electoral nightmare we've all been fearing, the split in the pirate vote.
47 parliamentary candidates are standing for election under the banner of the Independent Network, having signed a code of conduct endorsed by former MP Martin Bell. Well, the nutters have got to vote for somebody now. The Lib Dems are mainstream. 2 points to Sue. Phil, what boycott could be testing for teachers?
There's kind of standard test coming for 11-year-olds is sort of one of these SAT things, and the teachers' unions are saying that they're going to boycott it, but it's only about 33% of the teachers' unions.
I mean, I've got kids. I don't think they should have to deal with failure at that age. They've got the rest of their lives to wallow in that.
My favourite thing was that that one of the proposals the union came up with, we said, we'll make them take the test and then not give anybody the results. Then you'll learn about what life is. Empty and futile. I'm all for the testing, as long as they burn the results in a big bonfire.
No, it'll stop planes. You don't want to be doing that. It'll be ash.
The argument that against SATs is that children are just being taught to take SATs tests, and but the government says, no, that's not true at all. And the union says, all right, we'll go on strike to stop the SATs. And the government says, well, you can't do that. These kids have been revising for the SATs all year.
Well, the government has warned that if the boycott goes ahead, this year's league tables could be meaningless. We don't have SATs in Denmark at all. Basically, if you get to 11 and you haven't mastered Hans Christian Andersen, we leave you on a mountainside to die.
Wow, that's tough Viking love, isn't it?
And they have to send them to the mountains so they can't get any herring.
I won't hear a word said against herring. I was brought up by herring.
It would have been brilliant if there'd actually been famine in Denmark, and then we would have had a massive gig for you in the 80s and called it Herring Aid.
Two teachers' unions are planning to boycott SAT testing for 11-year-olds next month, despite the threat of legal action from the Department of Children, Schools and Families. Whatever happened to the Department of Education?
They failed their exams.
Oh, do they? Oh. Apparently, Ed Balls is considering legal action to change his name, presumably. Balls said of the union's decision that over two-thirds of their own members did not vote to support disrupting tests, but the head of NUT pointed out that it was actually 4/7 because Balls hadn't carried the 3. 2 points to Phil. Fred, as the dust settles, which blame game has erupted?
Yes, this is the volcanic cloud that still carries on. I do know that our newsreader colleagues are hoping that if another volcano goes up, it's Etna. Because they can just about pronounce that. What's the Icelandic one, Rory? How do you pronounce that?
Well, this is the strange thing that happens on the internet. We mentioned this last week. A listener called Matt Gibson has made a dance remix of my pronunciation of the Icelandic.
You're in the charts for the first time, Sandy.
I am a disco diva. Let's have a listen. All air traffic across the UK has been grounded.
In the event of eruption, get away.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Andy Hamilton, the notorious little.
Andy Hamilton on backing vocals.
So,
but people are now blaming each other.
Yeah, the blame started. Michael O'Leary from Ryanair said that they would not be paying the reasonable expenses incurred by their travellers had they had to stay abroad. Then he had to say yesterday that they would. But I guess what we'll find out is whether Ryanair's version of the definition of reasonable is the same as the people who've been checking into £600 a night hotels ordering room service.
I should do a movie about the turnaround called Saving Ryanair's Privates.
Well, Scotland opened its airspace a bit sooner, I think, than everyone. I think it was Tuesday.
Well, Danger is our middle name. Big Danger.
I'm so sick of everyone. Everyone's now got anecdotes, and they have to top everyone else's anecdotes. So you listen to people and think, oh, yes, well, we were stranded in Phnom Penh, and we had to charter a gyroscope, and I got just to Amsterdam. And from then, the sedan chair took us over to Utrecht, where basically we crawled on all fours through daffodils, and finally, Tarquil picked us up in the jumbo.
And then those poor people on that cruise ship, 30 hours with Jane McDonald and the norovirus. I mean...
I think that's the title of their next album.
It's really easy to spot anyone that got caught in the chaos. When they come up to you just before they speak to you, they go... Boom, boom!
Well, apparently the volcano is producing 1,000 tonnes of ash per second. That's the same as the pavement outside the Guildford Wetherspoons.
What is the science, though? Is it true that the planes might have crashed or not?
A spokesman for the Civil Aviation Authority defended the shutdown in the face of pressure, saying an accumulation of anecdotes does not equate to evidence, which suggests he's one of the few people not to have met David Cameron. I've learned learned such a lot about all these budget airlines. When the airspace reopened in Scotland, EasyJet were able to resume its Lisbon to Athens service.
I wonder if there was a terrible crisis on a Ryanair plane, that the announcements would be as quirky as the constant adverts they bombard you with when you're on the flight, because it's always like, would you like to buy a sandwich? Then there's one available from your stewardesses now. And then later on, would it be, the plane is going to crash in a fiery ball of death. Before you crash, would you like to buy a scratch card?
The fallout over the closure of European airspace continues, with airlines now demanding compensation from governments and thousands of passengers still stranded overseas. The airline industry has lost over £1 billion after placing it in a suitcase and checking it with BA. The flight ban left thousands of pupils stranded overseas at the start of a new term, or as Downing Street put it, class sizes fall under Labour. And at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Sue have got 4 points, but so too have Phil and Fred. We start round two with a cutting from the Belfast Telegraph.
A member of the Irish Naval Service has gone on trial for disclosing information about ships at sea. He's also charged with importing cocaine, possessing cocaine, and with having counterfeit hair straighteners. He's pleaded not guilty to all five charges.
And our thanks to Wendy Austin for sending us that. Jeremy, who took a school game of I Spy a little too far?
There was a high school in Philadelphia where they make cream cheese, and they wanted to find out who'd been nicking their laptops, so they put spy cameras in all of the laptops in the school. Webcams, hidden, so that you can't actually see, so you don't know if you're being filmed or photographed or not. And then it gave these out to teenage boys who took them back to their bedrooms. And one of these boys is taking legal action because there is an enormous amount of footage of this teenage boy sitting in front of his computer in his bedroom. And you've got to wonder about the poor soul's embarrassment, because when you're that age, you're downloading from your laptop most of the time. And
is that what they call it these days? Yeah. But, I mean, this tracking program takes one photograph every 15 minutes. That's CCTV footage. It's not... I mean, even the Lumiere brothers manage 24 frames per second. You know what I mean? It's not...
If I can speak, as a former teenage boy, the statistic once every 15 minutes does dovetail quite nicely.
Ah. Yeah.
I mean, if he'd been hitting it on the 7.5 minutes, he'd be fine. But I kind of think he must have been hitting the exact every 15 minutes.
Oh, I feel all strange now. I have a teenage boy. I must clean his room.
Just wait till you move out and take a chisel to it.
One of the kids that was confronted, it was a photo of him in his bedroom. They thought he had drugs, and it was sweets, bless his heart, as his child. And you think, oh, fair enough. Years before I found out you weren't supposed to snort sherbet dib-dabs. So
I used to melt and inject Smarties.
Freebase Maltesers.
Lower Merion School District in Philadelphia is being sued by parents after tracking software on school laptops took images of children without their knowledge. Webcams took 56,000 photos before finally capturing a pupil sitting still and smiling. The school district gave out 2,300 laptops to students, were then surprised when 80 went missing. I'd have been surprised if 80 had been returned. Anyway, 2 points there to Jeremy. Phil, have a listen to this. Last Christmas, I gave you my heart, but the very next day, you gave it away. Phil, who wants to make donation more organised?
I actually don't know about this.
See what we've done there? Last Christmas, I gave you my heart.
I look at my team, I can help out. Buddy, here.
There's an incentive to be an organ donor, and I've seen the reading material, Phil. You will get an eye for an eye. And if you want to give a tooth, you get a tooth. But there was no mention in the pamphlet of the appendix. That was on a separate sheet at the back.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. They're actually giving away T-shirts, and so you can actually have a T-shirt which reads, I gave you my liver and all I got was this lousy T-shirt.
So they're saying they'll help with funeral costs, which is a bit alarming, really, isn't it? The more kidneys you donate, the more we'll pay towards your funeral.
Is it like a neck
hexagon system where you accumulate points. So at the end, you're basically a big ball of skin with no organs inside, but you've got a powerboat.
It's not only organs. I was reading the thing on the internet. It said about organs, eggs and sperm. I thought it was a washing powder advert for a minute.
Just when it said demand for sperm and eggs had risen, I thought, oh, that Heston Blumenthal, you just...
It's a fabulous entree.
To make your souffle really fluffy.
they list sperm as expenses. So they say you get paid £250 for expenses. That's the NHS euphemism for sperm.
Is that why MPs are all tossers?
Yeah.
I carry a Donner card. I want to help someone to a kebab after my death. The Nuffield Council on Bioethics has been asked to consider new ways to encourage the public to donate their organs. The consultation group will also look at the consequences of opening a free market on organs. That is such a good idea. Look what the free market has done to the economy. And then imagine what Goldman Sachs could do to your insides. Wish I'd donated an egg this week. Only hit him on the shoulder. Now... at the end of round two, the scores are still exactly level. Both teams have got 6 points. Before we start round three, here's a cutting from The Guardian.
An Australian publisher has had to pulp and reprint a cookbook after one recipe listed salt and freshly ground black people instead of black pepper.
Now, thanks to everyone who sent us that. Sue, where might the atmosphere at one's nuptials be rather gay but also rather thin?
This is Nepal, which wants to become, or has, in fact, I think, become the first Asian nation to adopt gay marriage. And they are welcoming people up, gay people, to celebrate their nuptials at the top of Mount Everest, the birthplace of Buddha. All I can say is I think I speak for all gay women when I say we've got the footwear, we're ready. We've been wandering around in walking boots, just waiting for an opportunity to come up a mountain. And now it's here, we're game to go. This will, every gay woman from here to Timbuktu will be getting on the Gore-Tex, the fleece, all the kit, walking up to say I do. All gay men, obviously, will get to the top of the mountain dressed in full nunnery gear and wimple, singing Climb Every Mountain.
They used to make such a fuss about it when Edmund Tenzing Hillary Sherpa, whatever his name was, first invented Mount Everest double glazing in the 1950s. And it was all, everything was difficult then. It's like, and Roger Bannister was around the 4-minute mile in only 12 hours. Here's his marbles, black and white. And these days, everybody can just do everything, can't they? Because everybody's been up Everest for stag weekends and things like that.
The company apparently are going to offer elephant back bridal processions, and I think that is both a great way to make an entrance and a terrific way to make the bride look thin. I think so.
Does my bum look big on this massive elephant?
Nepal's tourist board is to offer gay weddings on the slopes of Everest in a bid to make the country Asia's top gay tourism destination. The idea came from Nepal's only openly gay MP, Mr. Sunil Pant, who says that Nepalis are tolerant as long as you don't walk around naked. Well, probably not too much of a problem on Everest. The travel agency offering the weddings is called Pink Mountain. I wonder why they named it after John Prescott. 2 points to Sue, Fred. Whose barbarous driving saw him banned?
This is a chap that went out just a bit tipsy in his kid's Barbie car.
Yeah.
And got done. He got caught. The police had been following him in Budgie the helicopter. They caught him, lifted him, and he's been grounded for a month, hasn't he? He's to sit in the town hall naughty step.
Please, please tell me his name was Ken.
Should explain to Sandy that driving in a Barbie car isn't a usual thing to do.
Didn't he find this truck in a lay-by, this bright pink Barbie, sort of 4x4 lay-by, obviously left by some other craven joyrider?
It belonged to his son. There's a conversation waiting to happen.
Daddy, I'm driving to Everest. I think... Make sure the first gear works. It's uphill all the way.
It's all but a bit severe on drink driving. That poor Welsh bloke, there's a hotel where I've stayed in Wales where this rugby team train, you see, and they all get pissed off their minds, and then they get hungry, so they have to get to the services, because it's just up. There's nothing there but the motorway, but the M4. So this bloke took a golf cart, didn't he, one of the Welsh internationals. There ought to be a lane on the motorway for space hoppers, pogo sticks, roller skates. If people are drunk enough and game enough to have a go in that lane, they should be allowed, I think.
Well, this guy was... Mr Hutton was twice over the drink drive limit.
The police must have said to him, are you drunk? He said, of course I'm drunk. I'm in a Barbie car.
Do you think he has a sticker on the back saying, my other car's Postman Pat's vehicle?
Apparently he'd souped the car up so that it could do 4 miles an hour. Bit of a CBeebies version of Pimp My Ride. Paul Hutton has been convicted of drunk driving and banned for 3 years after taking his son's electric Barbie car for a spin at 9 o'clock at night. The drunk man was found in the 4-foot by 2-foot car with his knees tucked under his chin, cruising along at 4 miles per hour in Clacton-on-Sea.
Oh, it had to be Essex, didn't it?
Tiny little car, 4-foot long, 2-foot wide, but a horn that goes...
When he first saw the police, Mr Hutton refused to stop and a car chase began and they... almost immediately ended.
It's not going to make for a very exciting episode of Please Camera Action. No,
no. Look at this fool trying to get away.
2 points to Fred. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr Hardy.
This was sent in by a bloke called Kevin, and I can't read the last name, but I think it begins with H. And it's a pub menu from the Half Moon in Putney. It says, potato skins, 4 skins smothered in melted cheese, bacon and salsa.
Ms Perkins.
This is an excerpt from Melbourne's The Age Online, and this was sent in by Andrew Bailey. Ryanair chief executive Michael O'Leary said he still hoped to convince Boeing that removing 2 toilets and adding 6 seats would not slow down emergency evacuations.
Mr Jupitus.
It's from the Wirral News, and it's a little colour piece headlined, Brothers to Guard Queen. 2 brothers have inherited the honour of guarding the Queen from a soldier who grew up in their street.
Mr McCauley.
You can maybe help me with the pronunciation here. Is it Lewes or Lewes? L-E-W-E-S.
Lewes.
Lewes,
Lewes.
Lewes.
You
right,
daft
okay.
Scottish bastard. Know nothing, do they?
Yeah, go back to Kirkcaldy.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted to know. There's no cutting.
Let's take a look at the final scores. Well, in keeping with this week's debate, so I can tell you that it is a draw. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from Der Spiegel International, sent in by Max Cowell.
EU officials have painted a disastrous picture of Afghan security forces. They say too many police can't shoot straight or take bribes.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the new scripts were Jeremy Hardy, Sue Perkins, Phil Jupitus and Fred McCauley. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Rory Morrison. The chair script was written by Simon Littlefield, Lucy Clark and Roderick Crooks, with additional material by Nathan Caton, James Kettle and John Hunter. And the producer was Sam Bryant.